All right, everyone, thanks for being on the call today. We're going to do a training call on qualifying a borrower. I know we have done these calls before, but just want to do it again because it's such an important call. It's part of everyone's main core classes you have to take just to kind of, you know, learn the business. And I want everyone to know that you will always be learning how to qualify a borrower. There's things in this business, new things that I learn every day or run across every day. I'm working on a deal right now where the property was a single-family residence, but it actually is zoned mixed use, and I had to learn there's a certain way to deal with that. It's a difficult thing to deal with for a lot of lenders. So every commercial deal is a little different is the point. And until you just keep doing deal after deal after deal after deal, I don't know if you'll ever figure out how to resolve everything, but this business is a constant learning type of business. So just let's go over, there's a lot of bullet points I sent out to everyone. I'm not going to go over all of them because they are all there. But let's just start off with some basics. Whenever you're qualifying a borrower, make sure there's an immediate need for lending. And we're going to get into a little bit about bank deals later. But if someone is just, again, we don't get paid up front. We don't only get paid at closing. We are lending professionals. If someone wants you to work for them, there has to be an immediate need for funding. You can tell with someone's tone, and that will still take experience and some time in the business, what they're kind of doing, what they're looking for, if they're really serious, if they're not. If they never give us any type of documents, we get a short form on them, they never give us any documents, they're obviously not serious. There's a lot of people that inquire about loans that just, you know, aren't serious. So, you know, someone tells you they don't need to refinance for the next 12 months, send them the product sheet rate matrix, follow up with them in, you know, 8 months. That's what I would do, you know, or even maybe check in with them once a month or something like that. But they're obviously not ready to go. Someone, if it is a refinance, someone should have to refinance in the next couple months, you know, and that's when they have an immediate need. Also, just to touch on that, just be careful of bank deals. I know a lot of you get hit with them, but remember, borrowers who are bankable can just go to a bank. It really doesn't make much sense for them to go to a broker, and I've been in this situation so many times that it's painful sometimes when it happens to you guys because I've lived through it so many times. The borrower is going to tell you, oh, I just want a broker because, you know, it's just a convenience thing for me. Whatever their reason is, I'm just a relationship person. It's always something, you know, but just remember when it comes to people's money, people do not waste money if they don't have to. People don't pay for things extra that they don't have to. Nobody does that. Not even rich people do that. So if someone really, really, truly is bankable, and for some reason they cannot walk themselves into a bank to get a mortgage, whatever the reason is, or even call. They don't have to physically go in either. They could do the same thing we do, call, send all their paperwork in. I just want everyone to know we are going to require a $4.99 upfront processing fee because, I've had this happen to me so many times. You'll be working on a bank deal, and you'll be shopping the file. You'll be putting a ton of work in processing all their documents because it's a lot of documents on a bank deal, and then all of a sudden the borrower is like, oh, Wells Fargo is going to do my deal. Oh, Bank of America is going to do my deal, whoever's going to do it, and you just wasted all that time. So if they want the service, you know, we can certainly provide it for them, but they do have to pay a $4.99 upfront processing fee, very small fee, which will be credited at closing. You know, to ask someone for $500 for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of work is nothing. So that's how we're going to determine if they're serious. We are really the shop that specializes in the secondary market, the lenders that are not banks. And that is a very complicated space to navigate, even if you're in the business. It is. There's people every single day that try to pose as lenders and stuff to us, and I have to individually vet all these people out to determine who really is a lender, who's not. So it is a complicated space. As you're in the business for a while, you catch on, but it still happens. So for a borrower who doesn't do this full-time, I mean, whatever their profession is, they're a teacher, I don't know, you know, even a real estate investor, sometimes it's going to be very, very complicated space for them to navigate, and they need someone to hold their hand, to coordinate with all parties, quarterback the deal, advise them, have backup plans for them, help them process documents, remind them to get documents in. Again, like I said, coordinate with title, property insurance, lawyers, realtors, anybody on the deal to get it done. So that's the service they provide. They either need the service or they don't. Things, it's just pretty obvious, you know, make sure the borrower is always engaged and paying attention. If someone's very hesitant with you or not giving you their time, you know, just be careful of that because they obviously probably are not serious about a loan. Do the loan submission with the borrowers on the phone. You know, I see a lot of you just emailing the borrower the loan submission. That if I just emailed all of our borrowers and Doria, I never called to follow up to physically speak to them or to follow up on docs, we would never close any loans. This is a very personal business. You do have to take the time to get to know every single one of your borrowers, and it's a very time-consuming thing. Believe me, I talk to dozens of people every single day. I understand. But you do have to take the time to get to know them. Some people love email. They love email. They're very quick with it. They prefer that. Other people hate email, and they just don't work like that. We use email to send all documents. I mean, they can fax them to us. We don't do mail. Someone can't mail us all the documents, really. I mean, nobody does that anymore. So you're just going to have to feel different personalities out. But again, don't just send them stuff, you know, and say, fill this out. Say, hey, can you take 10 minutes and fill it out with them? Put the little bit of extra effort in to get that client. Another tip, always know who you're dealing with. I see some of you sometimes, you know, maybe copying me on chains and stuff like that, which you really don't need to copy me until you have a short form. But if you have a question, of course, I'm here to help everybody. Always identify who you are speaking to. A lot of you think you are speaking to the direct borrower when you're not. It's somebody else. And you always have to, don't ever feel bad by asking someone what is your position or role in this transaction? You know, are you the direct borrower or are you somebody representing the borrower? You need to quickly identify who you're speaking to right away. We can't waste any time. Just so everyone knows, all the IEPs, all you guys ever have to do is just get a short form. That's all you have to do, and it literally is a short form. The first two questions are the borrower's contact information. If you guys are doing the short form with the IEP portal and the back end of the website that you guys all have your own logins and passwords to, just remember, I'm having Anthony change that, who's our CTO, but he's doing a million things right now, so I have to pace him one thing at a time. Just remember, if the borrower is not in the CRM, I cannot contact them because on the back end of the portal, it does not ask the borrower's contact information because when Anthony built those short forms, he was assuming the IEP was already going to put the borrower into the CRM. That's not the case on a lot of loan submissions I see coming from the back end portal, and it does not ask the borrower's contact information. So if for some reason you're extremely busy, you just go into the back end of the portal, they're not in the CRM yet, if you could please just put their email, phone number somewhere in the notes there in any of the answers, I'll figure it out. That's what you're trying to tell me. And I'll enter them for you so we can track everything. You know, I would never want to lose the lead for anybody. Okay. So I said, you know, all you guys need to do is really get the short form, but, you know, major things I use to qualify borrowers, and it's definitely deal specific, but obviously a tri-merge credit report, personal financial statement or 1003. You know, personal financial statement or 1003 is going to show all their assets, their liabilities, other properties they own, of course, how much cash they have on hand is always a biggie. You know, other things we use definitely to qualify borrowers are resumes. You know, how much experience do they have doing what they want to do? That's always a big thing, really, with any lender. Another big thing I use to qualify borrowers, of course, is bank statements. If somebody says that, you know, they are buying a $10 million property and they need, you know, $2.5 million down, and they say they have the down money, okay, we need a bank statement. You know, no one's going to jump, no lender is going to jump without proving the borrower has the down money plus the closing costs. And that's kind of something, we could go over now. A lot of the loan submissions I see coming in from all of you, the main reason they are not deals is because the borrower has no down money, we don't offer 100% financing. So don't ever tell anybody we do. We don't. Even the 100% financing programs out there, there are strings to all of them. I know we do lender calls every other week. I know the lenders have a slab of gold when they lay out the programs for us. Do business with them. Close a deal with them. It's a much different story. So just remember, some of the programs that we do here, they are a little fluffed up, but I've worked with all of these lenders, and I know they're always going to pitch their program to us in the best light, but that may not actually be how the loan ends up when the appraisal and title come back and everything comes back. So, again, just let's always make sure the borrower has the associated down money on a deal and closing costs. Permanent financing, you know, any type of permanent financing, the borrower always needs 25 to 30% down on the purchase price plus their closing costs. Loans over $1 million, over $1 million. So that means they must be buying the property for much more than over $1 million. So loan amount's going to be $1 million. At the most, we can get them an 80% LTV, but still 20% down plus closing costs. Most of the things we do here are small balance, so it's under $1 million. So it's always going to be 20, 25 to 30% down plus closing costs. Closing costs are always broker fee, lender fee, title insurance, property insurance. Those are always a borrower's closing costs. If it's a weird property, there would be some type of environmental, but those are always your closing costs. Most borrowers understand the concept of down money. They understand you can't buy something for no down money, but they always forget the closing costs, and so do all of us on the team as well. So I'm constantly just reminding everyone, yes, the borrower does have the down money, but how are we getting paid? If they just have the down money plus, you know, the lender's fee, title, and property, how do we get paid? So, you know, again, just always think of that, guys. We can't work for free. So that's just the biggest thing I wanted to really, really go over with you guys. There's a bullet point on here about a borrower pulling credit. You don't need to explain to a borrower anything how to pull credit. We used to have the IEPs get a loan submission, a tri-merge, and a PFS on the borrower. We don't do that anymore. You just need to get the short form. I'll explain to them how to pull credit real brief. I always explain to borrowers, we have you pull your own credit here. I refer you to a website called Credit Check Total. It is $1 to pull to sign up for the service and to pull the tri-merge. They do have to cancel the service within 7 days, so they are not billed an extra $30. Many of the borrowers we work with, just so everyone knows, already have the service. They love it. Real estate investors that borrow money very frequently love the service because they can pull a full tri-merge anytime they want. It just costs $30 a month for them to have the service. I explained to the borrower, we want you to pull your own credit and provide the tri-merge because, well, one, we don't have a service like that here. I don't pay for a service like that here. It would cost the company a lot of money, and it would cost me about $30 every single time we pulled a borrower's credit. If we deal with dozens of borrowers every single day, I'd probably bankrupt us just pulling people's credit. Plus, it's not the best thing. If I were to pull someone's credit, it's going to show up as some type of, you know, lending inquiry. If the borrower pulls their tri-merge, they're not a creditor. There's no bad mark or anything on there. And always explain to the borrower, you should always have your own tri-merge whenever you go and search for financing, for anything, for a house, for a commercial property, investment property, for a car, any type of major purchase in your life, even for a business, to start a business. You, the borrower, should always have your own tri-merge. You want to give that up front to the lender along with some other preliminary documents because you want to show them that your scores qualify, you meet their criteria. If the lender does not know if your scores meet their criteria, they'll start pulling your credit. And then we get these borrowers sometimes that their credit's been ran by so many different lenders, their scores are significantly dropping, the borrower is very frustrated. You don't want that to happen. You always want the borrower to have their tri-merge up front so they can give it to us. We can present it to the lenders, you know, to prove to them that, hey, they meet your FICO requirements. They have no tax liens, IRS issues, all that stuff. Judgments would show right up on the tri-merge. And then we can start getting them LOIs with that. So one thing you can ask borrowers as a tip, I don't have this on the short form, but if you're not exact, if a borrower is describing a property and you're not, sometimes borrowers are very tricky the way they describe things, and they don't always mean to be, they just are. If you're not sure if the person owns the property yet or they're trying to purchase the property yet, one quick thing is just ask them who's on the title of the property. You know, who is the actual name on the title of the property, or who's on the deed. You can also ask them that as well. Whatever the name is on there, that's who owns the property. I know the short form is the short form, but if you hear anything weird come up, if someone says that they are in a hard money loan, it's ballooning now. Why did they wait so long? I mean, most hard money loans are 12 months interest-only loans. Why did they wait so long to get financing now or to refinance now? If you hear they say they're in a bankruptcy, past foreclosure, a lawsuit, you know, anything weird, get the background story if you possibly can. If not, we will call and get it. But any of those kind of red flags that come up, we definitely need the background story. If someone already says that, oh, I already have a prior appraisal, it's only a month old, in your head, you should know if they have an appraisal that's only a month old, that means they were already shopping their loan. Why would they have a past appraisal? Because the lenders always order appraisals these days. A borrower can go and order an appraisal, but no lender is going to use that typically. so if they have an appraisal, you definitely need to ask them why. You know, and when a borrower sends you an appraisal too from the past, it will say the lender's name on it that ordered the appraisal. So if they sent if they recently have been shopping their loan and it hasn't worked out with that lender, first of all, we need to know why it didn't work out with the lender. The reason it didn't work out with that lender may be a deal killer for every other lender as well, or it may not. It just depends on the reasoning. But on that appraisal, we'll say who was the lender that ordered that appraisal and, of course, the date. So we can quickly figure out if they're shopping on it, shopping the file on their own, and kind of get to the bottom of it. If anyone has any type of financial criminal past, that's definitely not going to work. No lender is going to go for that, not even a hard money lender. Any type of major felonies or large crimes are going to obviously be a problem as well. When you get the address of property, if you guys want, you can plug it into Google and Google it. On every short form I get, I do that just to see where it is. If it looks like, you know, the property is in such a dilapidated area that you'd feel a little unsafe walking down the street, it's going to be a much harder loan to get done, because even hard money lenders don't want to lend in areas that are, they definitely don't want to lend in high crime areas. None of them do. And they all send you requirements. If you send them a deal like that to a high crime area, they will actually come back and say, well, we're not going to do this due to the crime rate here. Or sometimes the property is just so dilapidated, it's not going to work. Another thing too, on rehab deals, guys, be careful. We always try to stay $100,000 up, but on rehab deals, always try to make sure the purchase price of the property is at least 50K. It makes it so much easier to place. Under 50K starts getting really, really, really tricky. And, you know, 8 out of 10 lenders will not do it because it's just too low of a purchase price. If someone's buying a property for like 10 grand and they want to rehab it, it's I'm actually doing a deal like that now, but it's really, really, really hard to get done, especially when the borrower is putting so much more rehab into the property than the purchase price. The reason that they're purchasing the property for so low must make sense. Because nobody, the problem is the lenders get scared that someone's buying something for so cheap and it's so dilapidated that it's just going to fall apart. And then they're going to just have a pile of rubble they just lent on. So just always watch the high crime areas and the really low purchase prices. Just watch that. It's always going to become a problem. Also, on the really small deals, just be careful because, you know, we have to make our fee. You know, there's so much we do. And for those of you that we've closed loans with, you know, I copy everyone on all emails. I know you're seeing how much work goes into this. From the lower loan amounts, those borrowers, they, you know, we can't work a loan for under $2,000, a commercial loan. So a lot of them will balk at that. And it's, let's just get it out there up front. If they don't want to, just because it's a small deal, unfortunately, doesn't mean our fee can be nothing. It's just not fair. seasoning, you know, just obviously on a purchase seasoning doesn't seasoning meaning how long has the borrower owned the property. That's not an issue, obviously, on a purchase. On a refinance, just keep seasoning, you know, in mind, and it is a question on the short form. Just always know that that is something that can make or break a deal, how long the person has owned it before they're trying to refinance. If you ever hear the words free and clear, awesome. There's typically always a deal there if there's a property that's free and clear some way. Just to separate a little bit, the 1-4 unit investment properties. This means a single family residence, townhome, condo, 2-unit, 3-unit, 4-unit. Just remember, we can do those deals if they're pure investment properties, meaning our borrower is not going to live there at all. If a borrower calls you and wants to say, hey, I want to buy a single family residence, they're going into their whole story, the first thing you need to ask them is, are you personally going to live there with your family? Or are you using this property for investment purposes? If they're ever going to live in a 1-4 unit themselves or with their family, that's a residential loan, and we are not licensed residential brokers. We can't do that. If they want to buy a 2-unit and rent it out to 2 tenants, that's fine. We can do that all day long. It just has to be a pure investment property. Obviously, anything 5+ is pure commercial. We can definitely handle that, or any other commercial building. Another thing watch out for is, I'm seeing this a lot with lenders these days. If someone wants to buy, say, a 20-unit multifamily property and they want to live in one of the units, that's typically always a problem with every single lender. They don't want the borrower to live there in a commercial property in any capacity. Always be very careful as well of arm's length transactions. If a borrower wants to buy a property from a family member, that tends to become a problem as well. And there was just so much fraud that went on between family members prior to 08 that a lot of lenders just won't do that at all now, you know, which really stinks, because a lot of times those parties are very legitimate people. Other times they're not. We recently have had a couple fraud things happen here, and 3 of them recently. 2 out of the 3 were between family members. So I'm even seeing it more and more why lenders don't do that, because they're just trying to play games and be very shady about what they're trying to do. All right. Another question to ask, if a borrower seems very, disgruntled, frustrated about this process, again, get the short form of them, tell them someone could be in touch with them within 24 hours, business hours, and me or Dory will answer all their questions and then see if they want to move forward, issue them SIP lists, do all the stuff we have to do, explain rates and terms to them, continue to follow up for docs and stuff. But if someone's very frustrated, you know, what you should ask them is, what has been the obstacle for you in getting financing? And I always ask borrowers this, because the more I know about what you're going through, the more I know if I can actually solve the problem or I can't. And I ask every single call I've done with any of you, with borrowers, if someone is disgruntled on the phone, it's the first thing I ask. You know, what is going on with the file? Again, it's just going to help us place the loan. So that's it. Let's go a little bit to, those are just some tips. Let's go over this real quick. Temporary financing, just, some quick tips. We always have to prove to the lender that there's going to be an exit strategy on the loan, or they're very unlikely to do the deal, unless it is extreme, extreme, extreme hard money, where, those lenders typically lend 50 to 65% LTV. Some of them are as crazy as 10 points. I got an LOI from a lender a couple weeks ago. They were 10 points, like 50% LTV, and their interest rate was 17%. And it was crazy. None of those fees included our fees at all. Most hard money lenders, your average hard money lenders out there that are your 12%, 2 to 4 points somewhere, they all need an exit strategy on the loan, or they typically won't do the deal. So if someone has really, really bad FICO, just remember, yes, hard money is a possibility for them, but we still typically have to prove to the lender there's going to be an exit strategy, or, the lender's not very motivated to do it. So, on any temporary financing loan, and this is for any loan, borrowers always need to have reserves. So besides their down money plus closing costs, they need to have some reserves as well. On rehab deals of 1-4 units, the borrower always needs to have 20% of the purchase price plus their closing costs. That's how the 1-4 units work. On pure commercial rehabs, the borrower really needs to have 25 to 30% of the total project cost. Total project cost is calculated as purchase plus whatever the renovations are going to cost, the hard renovations, plus, of course, closing costs. So commercial renovations, just make sure, you know, it's a 5-unit, if it's a mixed-use building, if it's something commercial, they really should have prior commercial renovation experience. A lot of people have a lot of experience fixing and flipping 1-4 units. It's very common. Commercial is kind of a whole different thing, and lenders look at that very differently. Bridge loans, just remember, most bridge loans, a bridge loan is just something someone needs to, a property someone needs to buy very quickly, and maybe the property is already stabilized. It doesn't need any renovations. Or maybe the property is, they have to buy it very quickly still. It's not stabilized, and the investor has to get it leased up and then, of course, refinance out into something permanent. Most bridge loans only come in at 65% LTV. You know, I know we do speak to some lenders who have higher LTVs on bridge loans, but just please remember, those are for much larger loan amounts, typically $2 million and higher. Those lenders that are offering that 70, 75% LTV, get all of them, the loan amount must be $2 million or higher. So 25% down on a large property purchase like that is a large, substantial amount of money. We typically, most of the deals we see here are really under $1 million. I'd love to do bigger deals, and we do sometimes. It's just there's so many deals under $1 million. It's just how the industry is. There's a million more regular loans than there are the big ones. You know, don't get caught up on chasing the big loans. The big loan people have a lot of options typically, and will shop. I really do. I don't love the really, really small balance stuff, over 100K I love. But I love those loans because the borrowers have less options. And we can get a hold of them really quickly, get them on track, get their deal closed. So the small balance is really good. Ground-up construction on 1-4 units and even commercial properties. Most of the lenders we speak to do want the borrower to already own the land and have approved plans and permits. I know we speak to some of them who do say that they can finance the lot as well. Just remember that's a case-by-case basis, and it's only going to be for a developer or builder who's extremely experienced and can demonstrate that. They're going to demonstrate that through a resume/bio, and they're going to demonstrate that through proof of HUD 1s or settlement statements, that they have done numerous ground-up construction deals and closed in their personal name or their company name. With ground-up construction, you have to have prior ground-up construction experience. You know, it's very, very, very rare that a ground-up construction lender is going to lend to someone first time doing ground-up construction. And all the lenders have said that. Again, on these, anything really temporary, I mean, ground-up construction, we're definitely looking for loan amounts 100K over. Those are, ground-up construction are hard loans to get done. Rehab deals. Just the purchase price of the property should be at least 50K, and it's much easier to get done. A lot of people ask me, what if someone owns the land on temporary financing, whether it's a rehab deal or a ground-up construction loan? Well, if it's a rehab deal, they would already own the property. So let's talk about that real quick. When you already own a property for a rehab deal and you're in mid-rehab and for some reason you run out of money or it's not working out with the current lender or whatever is going on, it is very, very, very hard to get another rehab lender to come in because the borrower has already done a lot to the property and changed it. And most rehab lenders will not do that. Once you're already in with a rehab lender, you have to make it work. We have a couple that will come in and offer some financing, but it starts getting really expensive. It starts getting hard. And every single time I talk to a borrower, it's in their best interest to just continue with the current hard money that lender they're with. Now, I am doing a loan right now for a gentleman who we just ordered his appraisal yesterday, is in mid-rehab, but he used all of his own money. He doesn't have a current loan on the property, and he actually still somehow magically has a substantial amount of reserves still. The problem is with the rehabs in the middle is people get into this rehab, they don't plan it out right or whatever happened, they're out of money, they're out of liquidity, and then all of a sudden they want, you know, another rehab lender to come in, and most of the time that will not work because they're out of money. What happens if the new rehab budget doesn't cover every single thing they need? Then that lender is stuck with the property, and that's, they're not in the business of owning real estate. They're in the business of making loans and getting that money back so they can do it again. So that's always very, very hard. If someone's in mid-project, they'll take the rehab short form, but just please keep in your head that is very hard to get done, and those are the reasons why. Ground-up construction, people always ask me, if someone already owns the land, does that count towards their total project cost? And the answer is, with some lenders, it does. It certainly does. We've had probably about two, maybe even three ground-up construction lenders we've talked to recently who will count the purchase of the lot as part of the total project, as part of the 25% of the total project cost they need to contribute to the project, and other lenders won't. We had a call before Christmas with Jordan Capital Finance. They've now merged with B2R. Can't think of what their new name is, but they will not count the lot. They don't lend. They just don't. They don't do that. So it really just depends on the lender. Permanent financing, kind of the tips on that. We already talked. I know I'm going to stress down money on all these. But obviously it's a purchase. We don't have any seasoning issues. If it's a refinance, with the 1-4 units, we do work with one. We only work really with one that has a 1-month seasoning requirement, meaning they only have to own the property for 1 month. Always it's on the short form. When did they buy it? On permanent financing, there 600 is really the cutoff in the marketplace. If someone's FICO is under 600, it's almost impossible to get them into a permanent financing loan. But really on permanent financing, you really want that borrower's credit to be like 650 or higher in order to get them good terms. You know, banks would really like a borrower to be 680 or higher. Even like our bank alternate lenders that we work with, and we've talked to so many of them on the phone, they really would like to see 650 or higher in order to get the borrower the best terms. The more money a borrower has on hand, the better FICO they have on hand, always going to be much easier to push that loan through underwriting. Another thing to check out, and this is a question on the short form. If someone ever answers, I always ask this question because it's happened to me. I've had to learn all these things the hard way, and now I'm trying to prevent everyone from having to learn these things the hard way. If it's a refinance and they own the property, always make sure those rental payments are going into some type of bank account. Preferably, it should be a business bank account since this is an investment property. It's being used for business purposes. But they have to be tracked. And I had a loan a couple years ago where I didn't know that this was going to be a problem. I had four leases on a 4-unit, and then the lender asked for bank statements halfway through underwriting, and not all four of those rent payments were going into that bank account. The one tenant, the landlord, was just pocketing their money, and it never went into the company bank account. And that lender would not count that rent towards the debt service calculation on the property. And it drastically drops the borrower's loan amount in order to meet the lender's DSCR. So just, I always stress to borrowers, everything has to be tracked. You know, it has to be. Lenders are crazy with that these days. Everyone does their little DSCR, the debt service ratio. Debt service coverage ratio is what that stands for. Everyone does a little different. So don't worry about that now. On the permanent financing form, I just ask, you know, very basic questions. What is the rent and what is the taxes? What's the insurance? Everyone does it a little different. Velocity, who's a lender we work with, for loans under 500K, they don't even do a DSCR calculation, which I still think is crazy, but I love it. It works out to our advantage when I get some of these difficult files. So what they'll just do on a 1-4 unit deal, even on a commercial, is they're only going to do a 70% LTV max. So they don't do loans under 100K, but say they did. If a property appraises for $100,000, they will just give, the borrower is going to get $70,000. That's it. They don't make sure everything debt services. So again, they probably get they probably are already anticipating a certain amount of loans are going to default. They have to be if they don't do that. REITs and terms for LTVs, you know, for 1 to 4 units, just, you know, try to focus on 75K and up for 1 to 4 units, permanent financing. Again, we're the shop that's really taking someone to the secondary market. We're not the best bank rate brokerage company. We don't do that. We don't compete for bank loans, and I explained earlier why we don't. It's because the people that are bankable have a lot of options. But, you know, in the secondary market for 1 to 4 units and for pure commercial properties, you're really looking at somewhere around an 8% and a 30-year AM. Fixed rates are really 3, 5, 7, and 10 years. And that's really it. You know, in terms of permanent financing, we went over all the stuff. You know, FICO has to be much higher in permanent financing than in temporary. Property obviously needs to be fully rehabbed and producing income, and with 99% of lenders, we do work with one that's not the case, but there's 110, so we just have to talk in general terms. Just be aware that there is a debt service coverage ratio calculation that goes on with every single lender typically, and that's the lender's just comparing the income on the property to the expenses to see if the property can afford the new mortgage payment. Don't worry about how they do the DSCR calculation. I don't even know how they do that for every single lender. Every single lender does it different, and I don't care. Our job is just to get the lender the information and let them tell us if it debt services for them or not. And that's really it, rates and terms. Just remember, if you are ever dealing with somebody, I had this happen to me before as well, if you are ever dealing with somebody on a hard money loan and they're doing a takeout loan, I will also advise them of this, but just make sure that they don't ever up their hard money loan amount. Once you get a payoff balance from a borrower, because that first lender has to get paid off, they can't ever up that payoff balance. That's a big no-no. I had that happen to me actually the end of last year, which was the first time that ever happened to me. So that's really it, guys. That's all I wanted to say. You know, all I can say is just down money, closing costs, make sure people have experience, liquidity. You know, make sure certain numbers are kind of adding up, you know. But if not, that's what we're here for as a team. So if anyone has any questions, let's do some questions. Or if anyone has any deals they want to talk about they're unsure of, we can go over that right now, too. All right, guys. Does anyone have any questions at all about qualifying a borrower or any deal you're working on at all?
I've got a question. So explain, this seasoning thing is always kind of a little baffling to me. Seasoning only applies to refinance, not to purchasing?
Yeah, because seasoning basically means how long has the borrower owned the property. So if it's a purchase, they don't own it, you know?
Right, but think about it this way. Like, so say borrower A gets a hard money loan to rehab a pure commercial property, their only exit mm-hmm. strategy is to sell it because they don't have the seasoning to refinance it permanently. Okay, so buyer B comes along and wants to buy it. They can get permanent financing no problem, so the lender doesn't seem to have an issue with the fact that the property's only just recently been stabilized.
If it's a bank, they are going to have problems with that, though. It depends on who the lender is going to be. If it's like a bank alternate lender, on a purchase, you know, our bank alternate lenders of the world, you know, Curry, Athos Capital, Vizio, Lima One, all those lenders that do that stuff, in that scenario, Ryan, that would work out. If it was recently rehabbed and stabilized and someone was going to purchase it, the lender wouldn't really care on a purchase.
But why do they care on a refinance? Why? What's the difference? If the property is still the same property that's only just recently been stabilized, what makes it a difference between the refinance and a purchase? Why wouldn't they just, you know what I mean? Like, if all things were equal with the borrowers, like the property still has just recently been stabilized, why does that make a difference to the lender?
That's a great question, and that's something that pains me every single day, just so you know. On the 1 to 4 units, we have a lender that only has a 1 month seasoning requirement, which is a very unique niche that they have. So I can get over that in the 1 to 4 units. There's just this weird stigma in our industry that the business should be producing income for 2 years in order to qualify for permanent financing. There is just this weird stigma in the industry, and it's been there forever. You could ask any commercial mortgage broker. It's been there forever. Even when you go to apply for a business loan, any of the business lenders we've always talked to, 2 years in business, 2 years, 2 years, 2 years, and banks really harp on that, you know? I mean, lenders do in general. So it is something that pains me as well, but that really is the stigma. Now, I'm not saying the loan can't get done. First of all, banks can really do whatever they want. A lot of them do have the two-year requirement of that property, or that business, because most properties are owned in different entities, you know, different LLCs or whatever the corporate entity is. But I do know that there's borrowers that, you know, you fix things up, rehab them, and the bank does the takeout loan for them. The only thing is eventually they are going to max out of loans with the bank. A bank's only going to give you so many loans. You know, they just don't do that. They cap you at a point. Mm-hmm. Other lenders will typically, depending on the property itself, it's typically going to be 70 or 75%. They can still refinance you out, but they're not going to go off the full appraised value if it's less than the two-year seasoning. They're going to only lend 75% of the purchase price and 75% of whatever improvements that borrower can prove that they spent on that property. So they still can get refinanced out, just not at the full ARV value, the full as-is value, actually, now that the renovations are done at.
Right.
Sometimes it does work out, though. Sometimes the property has been improved so much, or sometimes the way they're buying it and the renovations they put into it, what they can prove, actually is enough for them to refinance out. They're not going to get any cash out. But yeah, it's a weird stigma in the industry, and I don't understand either. If the property is now producing and performing, according to me, it should qualify for permanent financing right away, you know?
Right.
The lenders out there just want to see a track record. They want to see that property producing income for some time in order for it to, you know, qualify. It's just that two-year stigma, and I run into this every single day.
Well, to me, what doesn't make sense is it seems to be a distinction between it being a refinance or a purchase. Like, it seems to be they're more comfortable with it if it's just a purchase.
Yeah, because obviously if you're just purchasing it, you didn't own it. So there can't be a seasoning requirement.
Mm-hmm.
You're purchasing it.
Yeah, but again,
it.
Like, in that same scenario, the property may have just been brought up to being stabilized and rehabbed by one person, and then somebody else comes along and purchases it right after it's been stabilized. What's the difference in the property? You know, there's no track record of stabilization in the property from a lender's perspective. Why do they feel more comfortable with it being a purchase than, say, a refi? That's what I don't, you know.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a good question to ask on the lender calls. With our bank alternate lenders, that would work. They wouldn't care. But I could tell you for a fact there'd be banks out there that would still care.
Okay.
That even coming in to purchase it, they're going to be very weird about this. That their borrower trying to purchase a property that doesn't have the history, the track record, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Banks typically like to lend on assets that are just, you know, the most awesome assets out there and have been producing income for a very, very long time.
Right.
But that's why there is a secondary market, and that's why people like us do what we do. So we can explain to the borrowers their options and take them to the appropriate place, and sometimes, you know, sometimes borrowers don't want to hear the rates and terms that they qualify for, the situation that they're in, but it is what it is. You know, me sugarcoating it is not helping the borrower. You know, that you have to kind of hit them with reality in a professional manner, that this is how the industry works. Did anyone else have any other questions about qualifying a borrower or any deals you're working on right now at all?
Hey, Megan, this is Dave. I have a quick question about how that is submitted to you.
Okay.
I don't know if we have an update as of yet. This is on the beach condo down here in St. Thomas. Basically,
yeah, the
conversation is limited with the borrower because he's in Europe, I guess. Primarily lives in New York. Travels to Europe a lot. There's been a lot of emailing and forth between he and I. That's how I got the info for the short form. But he, from what I held quite a long relationship with a bank locally here. But apparently they refuse to do biz with him any longer unless they can see him face to face and turn him off a little bit, which is how I got his business. So, you know, this is a guy that is obviously very bankable, but with not a lot of less options for and the islands, he kind of got ticked off. And, you know, his attorney, which is a good friend of mine, you know, that's how we ended up with him.
What's the borrower's name?
Paul Bochek.
Okay.
So I just figured we hadn't gotten hold of him yet because, again, like I said, he's in Europe. I mean, he will answer the phone eventually, but
okay.
It's about 6 hours ahead of us.
Yeah, so it looks like his short form came in on yesterday. And
correct,
then
yeah.
I just emailed him to talk to him a little. We haven't gotten a hold of him. So I emailed him last night. Story called him today. It's in the CRM. One thing, too. Go ahead.
Well, just so you knew a little bit about this borrower, is like I said, he's held a relationship. He owns a lot of things here. And he's bought an additional condo. And, you know, he's bankable, but I guess the bank, they ticked him off a little bit, saying, hey, we don't want to do anything with you unless it's face-to-face, which kind of blows my mind, but whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm just letting you know that this gentleman may have options, but as far as, you know, borrowing anywhere on island, he has very, very limited options.
Okay. One thing, too, on his short form. So this is a one-bedroom condo, right?
Yep.
So on his short form, it looks like it's rented out, but he put the property 66% occupied.
You know,
how's that
and
possible?
I meant about that, the only thing I can think of is that maybe he's only going to, because we have like a peak season here and we have an off season, so there may be like 3 or 4 months out there that no one will be in it. I don't know why he did that.
That's okay. That becomes really hard, Dave, to get done sometimes for loans. Because, like, commercial loans, it's based off of the income expenses on the property. And when the property's not rented, even though it's silly, I know it's silly, because a lot of times these investors make more money renting a property out like this than if the person was on a one-year lease, you know?
Oh, yeah, because he'll pay his mortgage, you know, he'll pay his, like, his monthly mortgage will be paid for, like, you know, 3 times over every month.
Yeah. Although I think we have one lender, though, that can do this, actually, now that I'm looking at his thing. But, yeah, I'll get the, as soon as we can get a hold of him, I'll probably just, do you know when he's going to come back?
No, I don't know. He works over there a lot. Like I said, him and his wife primarily live in New York City. But he owns a bunch of property here, and from what I understood, is just that the bank didn't want to deal with him anymore because they couldn't see him face to face. So their loss, our gain, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we left him a message today, and we're just going to continue to follow up with him to see if we can just talk a little bit about his loan and let him know what we can do for him.
Good deal. I just didn't want you thinking I was wasting our time with somebody that is bankable. They just, you know, I don't know why they're being like that, but whatever.
Yeah, no, I get some, this is a personality basis. Sometimes people just get rubbed the wrong way and use what it is.
And it's,
okay.
You know, with that being a smaller loan, they'll probably take forever on it anyway because this is what they do.
Yeah, banks don't really move on anything really under $500K very quickly, so it just kind of, again, is what it is, you know.
Well, I do believe the deal is time sensitive, so I think we can help him.
Yeah, I emailed him late last night, and then Dory called him today, so we're on it. You know, we're just waiting for him to get back in touch with us so we can send him the docs we need and go over rates and terms and see what we can do and present his file. I mean, with someone like this, too, just remember, he probably is trying other banks. You know, if he's very bankable, why would he not just try another bank? You know.
I get that, but the thing is, a lot of the lending is weird down here because a lot of it can be complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we have lenders that, you know, some people don't down here, or that they don't even know about. But a lot of times down here, people, I think 95% of real estate transactions down here, the money has to come from a bank that's, you know, located here. So I don't know.
Okay. All right. Well, we are on it. Just need to be able to talk to him so we can see how we can help him.
Thanks.
Yeah, of course. Does anyone else have any other questions, guys, about qualifying a borrower or any deals you're working on right now?
Hey, Megan, this is Donnell.
I'm trying to
track down this Craig guy, the one that wants to. Did you get the information about the with the pictures of the shopping mall that they're trying to get, $2.5 million?
I got the email and I responded to him last night, and then I didn't get any pictures. He just emailed me. He didn't send me any pictures though. Can you send them to me?
Oh yeah, it's a huge place. That, and I didn't know if the timeline was going to be so. I told him at first I didn't know. You know, that's why I just sent basically an email what he sent me, because it was an auction type of thing, and he said at 30 days after that auction they want to close. And that's where I'm in about 10 minutes, I'm trying to track him down now at the office where the guy gave him my number. Another guy called, they own this other property. I'm trying to find the right docs to send. He wants to refi. This is the second loan. I haven't sent it in to you yet. I just got off the phone with him. Second loan, 80-unit apartment building. The family been owning it. They own it for 28 years now. He wants to refi, take money out, and do something else, like buy another property. Credit score is 750, and he's very motivated, like ready to do something now. Nice area of Michigan, so that'll be coming through. Now, what I'm looking for when the refi, these big apartment buildings and things like that, what doc should I send them? Because I notice, well, that's a purchase for Craig. Is a purchase, so that's a bridge loan short. I need to know the exact form, so I'm not bothering you so much. Like, what form should I send him? What form do you pull out just for the refi? That's all he wants to do. Refi, pull out some money, and do something else, buy something else.
It's going to be a permanent financing loan submission, because you just told me the property is 80% occupied and he has good FICO. So
oh,
I know
it's 100%, it's 100% occupied.
Oh, it's 100% occupied.
It grosses something like $38,000 a month.
I would just do a permanent. Even if he wants a bridge, I can quickly transform it, but I doubt he wants a bridge, because if we have to first of all, a bridge loan is a hard money loan. You know, he's going to be looking at,
He said he wasn't interested in hard money, just regular something. Yeah.
But see, what borrowers don't understand is that there's a closing time difference from temporary financing / hard money to permanent financing. Permanent financing lenders don't move like hard money lenders do. You know, they just don't.
Right.
But you can get the loan done for him probably in 30 days on the permanent side, and get them to cash out and still get them some decent interest rates and terms.
Okay. All right. That's exactly
so
what
I would do permanent. And if I doubt he's going to want to bridge, especially since his FICO is so high and the property is, like you said, full occupancy. And I'll go over rates and terms. Don't ever worry about telling a borrower what documents they need. Just let me do that. I have emails that are reloaded.
That's
all I ever needed from you guys is just the short form. And I'll always respond to the short form, and then a lot of you guys will see I respond to the short form, and I tell them, I go over rates and terms with them, and then I go put right in the email all the documents I need from them, then and there. So no one's ever waiting on us for docs. And then if it's late, obviously, and me and Dory can't call, because I know a lot of you see me doing emails at like midnight and all kinds of stuff. I will always call them the next day just to follow up as well, to talk to them if they have any other additional questions or anything.
Good. I noticed you're really on top of that right away, because I'm looking at the email from Craig. I'm reading everything back and forth. I'm just trying to lock him down. I didn't know if he got back in touch with you or not, because I made a call to him. Then I sent another email to him, because he made it sound like, you know, the auction is coming. So I wanted to make sure that everybody had gotten in touch with everybody. But it seems like he emailed you back already. That was Craig Cromer. Okay.
Yeah, he just emailed me when we were on the training call, because I emailed him late last night, and I called him before the call to follow up with him. And then he just emailed me. So he did respond to me, and this is kind of good to go over on this qualifying a borrower call that we're doing today. This guy, just so everyone knows on the team, needs a bridge loan. They're looking to buy like a retail strip mall or something like that, like you said, Donnell.
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course. Yep.
Looks like it's pretty leased up too, so it's producing some cash flow, which is always good. The more cash flow something's producing, obviously, the more chance it has of funding. So he just said, I explained to him, if he has to, this guy has to close super, super quick. He wants to buy a property from an auction, but then after you get into a purchase and sales contract with the auction, they actually give you 30 days to close.
Right.
That's, 30 days is great.
Right.
Well, he emailed me back to Nell and said, hey, Megan, thank you for the information. My partners and I are putting things together today. The auction ends this Thursday afternoon, and we would have 24 hours to come up with 5% of auction price. Then we would have 30 days to close. Would we be able to get a funds letter from you to provide the auctioneer we need in order to participate?
Now, that confused me. A letter of funds? I'm not sure.
Yeah, no. So this is good. So now we can talk about on the call. So here's the thing with auctions for everyone. All auctions, just so everyone knows, work differently. Some auctions only operate in cash, and that's just how they work. There is no loans. The borrower needs to buy the property in cash. Some auctions make the borrower put 5% down, 10% down, whatever they make you put down at the time to win the bid of when you won the bid of the property in 24 hours, you need to put that money down to hold it, or they're going to relist the property right back on the auction. They all give borrowers different times to close as well. I would say 30 days is pretty standard, though, from all the auction deals we've done lately. A lot of the auctions I've worked with have given the borrower 30 days to close after they put down their, 5, 10%, whatever they're almost like their. Well, I guess it's like your down money, but it's like the good faith money that they're going to
earnest deposit.
The auction. But this Craig doesn't understand that his five. I already told him in the previous email the highest LTV you're going to get on the bridge loan is a 65% LTV, which he needs to come with 35% down plus his closing costs. I'm back and explain this. We can get him a loan for the 5% down to hold the property. That's something he, as a real estate investor, has to already have. Mm-hmm. He has to have skin in the game. So
skin in the game. Yep.
Yeah, I will email him back and copy you and explain that. And maybe he just didn't word it right. Maybe they do have the money, but he just clearly said to me, can you get us the funds so we can participate in the auction? It's that needs to come from you guys. You guys are the real estate investors. We can get you the funds to close the loan, but not to participate in the auction. You have to have the money to put down to hold that property.
Okay. Yeah.
He's probably looking for a pre-approval letter.
He already has all the documents that I need to get him a pre-approval letter that was sent to him all last night.
Wow.
Yeah, so he's asking me a question. I mean, regardless, he already knows all documents he needs for a bridge loan. So for us to get him, and whenever someone asks you for a pre-approval letter, they're really asking for an LOI, a letter of intent.
Definitely.
But they don't understand how to word that. Sometimes borrowers will say, well, I'm looking for a commitment. I'm looking for a commitment. A commitment in commercial lending, just so all of you guys know, a commitment in commercial lending literally doesn't come until, a day or two before the loan closes, an actual physical lending commitment. It's always a letter of intent. Hey, we're willing to do this if the property appraises, if title comes back free and clear, if the borrower gets us all the documents they need, if. That's how commercial lending is. That's why this is a bit, this is not a cookie cutter business. This is not residential lending. And residential lending can get kind of crazy too, but commercial is just different because it's not based on the borrower, but it's also based off the cash flow of the property or the cash flow the property will make. But appraisals, title, those things kill deals and stuff. But in commercial, again, I'm not a residential expert, so I'm not sure how they do it in residential, but I know in commercial it's always a letter of intent the lender gives the borrower that they have to sign after the borrower does give them some initial documentation to prove, what they're doing here. And then even after an appraisal has been ordered and title's been done and all that stuff, I have never had this happen to me, but I know it has happened to other brokers. You know, lender could, for some reason, turn around and say, "We're still not doing this deal. We're not doing it." Mm. We've never had that happen to us here, but I've an actual committee approval to do a loan does not come until about 2 days before the loan actually closes.
Even if you give them an LOI.
Yeah, an LOI really means nothing, to be honest with you. I mean, it's a good faith letter of intent. It's a good faith letter of intent. The lender's interested, but, you know, it's different from lender to lender. I would say banks are very, like, if a bank is using an LOI, they're very serious about the deal. If a permanent financing lender issues an LOI, they're very serious. But hard money lenders issue LOIs all the time and can't do the deal. You know, so you just, you know,
so
that's
maybe,
why you really have to know what you're doing in the business. Yeah.
Oh, well, let me introduce myself. My name is Robert Pena from New York. I just started with you guys.
Hello.
I have a question for, now, is it stronger to have a commitment letter out to a client than an LOI?
You're not going to, no one's going to give you no one's going to give you a commitment until literally a couple of days really before closing, you know?
Gotcha.
Sometimes it's called like a lending commitment, just so you know. But it's always a letter of intent up front, you know, before any appraisals, environmentals, title is done. It's always a letter of intent because the property may not appraise. Yeah, the borrower may not meet all those, the borrower or the property may not meet all the conditions of the letter of intent. You don't know until an appraisal is done, until title is done, an environmental is done, if it needs to be done, you know. You just don't know. And on commercial properties, there's all different types of commercial properties. You know, I did a loan 2 years ago on a limousine company. It was like a warehouse. And the borrower never told me that the actual limousine company, the warehouse, used to actually be a gas station. Like, he just totally left that out. And I didn't even think to ask him that because I actually went there in New Jersey to meet him and the property, and it never looked like it used to be a gas station. There was there was nothing that indicated that. So
now you got the soil samples and all that stuff.
Yeah, so they went and did an environmental, the lender did, and here they find out that there's gas pumps underneath and so those things get tricky. You know, a residential is typically not like that because everyone uses their home for residential use. You know, they're not using it for a business purpose.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like the actual lending committee for every single lender doesn't give a final approval to fund the loan until a couple of days before the loan closes.
Okay.
Don't tell a client that. They freak out.
Right.
You know.
No. So what we try to do is try to get a package together here. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I always explain to them, look, here's on your file why this loan can be done or why it can't. You know. And so far we, I would say, like, in the past year, we only had one lender ever back out of a loan, and that was Jordan Capital Finance. And that was – they backed out of a rehab loan that we had with them, and there was things the borrower didn't hold up to as well. But they were also going through a merge with B2R, and they literally dropped every single file. It wasn't just ours. So
– I just sent you over aerial shot, Megan, of the whole property. It's huge, and it looks like it's mostly. It has doctor's office, a dentist's office. It has a lot of stuff in there, and I think 8,000 square feet of it. They're moving in their own salon. I think he owns a salon. That's for that property. That's Cromer's property.
Yeah, actually, I'm sorry. I do have that, Donnell. So I uploaded
offering
that document.
Memorandum. Okay. Good. Okay.
Yeah, I haven't. So I'm going to get back to Craig, though. Just remember, though, he has to have the 5% to put down at the auction, and they have to have the 35% down plus their closing costs.
Closing costs.
They don't have that, you know?
Right.
Closing costs, your broker fee, lender fee, title insurance, property insurance. They have to have that.
Yeah, they should be knowing this most of the time if they're in the kind of game that they're in. So this is
a
standard.
It is standard. You know, we've done so many lender calls, and all the lenders have all very similar terms. All bridge lenders that we talk to, they're all 65% LTV, you know?
65%.
Some of them advertise 70%, but that rarely ever happens, and that's why I don't even tell borrowers that. Mm-hmm. But again, sometimes people just wake up and want to buy something, and they just have a good talk. Let me email Craig, because maybe I always give everyone the benefit of the doubt until I know that we have nothing there. Let's still continue the dialogue with him. You know?
Yes. I will. I'm about to talk to him now. I'm about to lock him down here in the next few minutes.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to shoot him an email here shortly, and I'm going to copy you as well. So.
Okay.
All right, guys. Well, it's 4:10, so I'm going to let everyone go. Thank you so much for being on the call. If anyone does have any questions we can get to, just shoot me an email, and I'll talk to you guys later. Bye.
All right. Talk to you later.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Bye.